Assembled devotees, and all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I will quote two verses from the Bhagavad Gita. As I said, we don't have enough time to do all the Sanskrit, so the two verses which pertain to tonight's class and to today's very wonderful festival of the appearance of Rukmini Devi. So Krishna says in 1857, all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, you will be lost. So Krishna is telling us that the way to really be peaceful and happy and joyful in your life is to depend upon him. He asks you to do that. Sometimes we don't like to depend upon anyone except our own self, because we feel it gives us a sense of independence, a sense of personal strength and and personal know-how and personal do-it-ship, so to speak. But Krishna says if you do that, if you only depend upon your own efforts, and your own efforts are based upon your mind, which is limited, and your intelligence, which is limited, then what will happen is that you may run into some very steep, difficult troubles. But he says, if you depend upon me, I will guide you, I will direct you, I will help you. I will make certain that even if you have some obstacles, I either will lessen them, or maybe I'll even increase them, whatever it will take to enable you to develop more virtue, more Krishna consciousness, more devotion, more love, more submission, more surrender. Whatever that will take, I will be right there with you. In other words, as we all know that when we work with computers, we generally have some kind of a backup. That's if the computer fails. So you've got a backup to replace what you lost when it crashes. So sometimes we crash, and we don't like that, but sometimes it does. But we have the backup to prevent the crash, and that backup is Krishna. He's there. He's always there. Where is he? He's right in our hearts. So again, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Sometimes devotees, they get different ways of remaining conscious of Krishna. It's very difficult to remain conscious of the Lord because there are so many other things that occupy our mind, occupy our hands, occupy our intelligence. But some devotees, they silently, quietly, while they're performing their service, they're saying, this is for you, Krishna. This is for you, Krishna. Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances and worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So the devotee, wanting very much to obey the instruction of Krishna, engage your mind always in thinking of me, when normally the mind simply flits from here to there, everywhere. So this is for you, Krishna. I'm turning this water on for you, Krishna. I'm turning it off for you, Krishna. I am making it warmer for you, Krishna. I am making it colder for you. This whole activity is for your pleasure. Now I'm putting this on the fire, Krishna. Now make sure that I don't make it too high or too low. Make it just right. You see, this is being Krishna conscious. You're aware of Krishna throughout the process of everything that you do. Krishna likes that. How do we know that? Well, I just gave you that verse. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Always. Well, it's hard to always, but this is one method, one means. I happen to put a tattoo on my wrist, and so whenever I look at my watch, I see the letter K, and I think of Krishna. That person that I talked to you about, he or she is always thinking of Krishna. I'm thinking once every 5 minutes, maybe once every 20 minutes. Oh, there's Krishna. I forgot you for 20 minutes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But yes, if you are performing whatever the deed may be, whatever the activity might be, Now, there are some activities where you cannot say what I just said. You're doing some studying, and you're memorizing certain things. So what can be done is every 5 minutes you stop, you see, and you take out a minute or two to just remember, what am I doing this for? Who am I doing this for? I'm doing it for the love of Krishna, to give him pleasure. Whatever it may be, if you're cooking, you do it for pleasure. If you're driving, it's for Krishna's pleasure. If you're thinking, for Krishna's pleasure. You're painting a picture, for Krishna's pleasure. You're dressing your deities or feeding your deities, it's for Krishna's pleasure. Everything has to be for Krishna's pleasure. If we don't do it for his pleasure, then whose pleasure are we doing it for? Our own. And that's self-love. And that's something we want to destroy. Self-love has to be replaced with Krishna love. And if you love Krishna, then that is the highest love you can give for yourself, actually. Because Krishna will then bless you. He blesses the very fact that you're making the effort, you're making the attempt to try to remember him. And when he blesses you, you feel joyful in your heart. You feel peaceful. You feel loving. You feel caring. You feel thoughtful. When you feel all these types of things, you're happy. And who doesn't want to be happy? So the means to really expressing true self-love is to give your love to Krishna. As he says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. So now I'll talk a little about Rukmini Devi, because she is the epitome of selfless service to Krishna. She has all good qualities, all good attributes, full of care, full of thought, full of affection and warmth for Krishna. So it just happened to be that when she was about 14 or 15 years old, it was time for her to get married. In ancient days, over 500 years ago, that was the time. And even today, they married girls very young. So it was time for her to get married. She was a princess. She was very qualified. She had many good qualities. She was highly educated. And one of the things that she learned while being in the palace life, because she was a princess, was that different sages would come to the palace and they would talk about Krishna. They would talk about his attributes, his qualities, his abilities, his knowledge, and how great a person he was. So she would hear all of this. And as she would listen to these wonderful talks about the pastimes of Krishna and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it would trigger something within her that would force her or compel her to feel a greater and greater attraction to Krishna. Some of you may have had that same experience. For example, you took a hold of the Krishna book maybe the first time and you started reading it, and something inside you said, yeah, I want to know more about this person. I want to be close to this person. That's what happened to me. Somebody gave me this Krishna book. Yeah, really. somebody gave me this Krishna book. It was that silver-colored one, which was one of the first ones that came out. And I began reading it. And the more I read it, the more I wanted to read it. And I said, I want to be in that pastime. I want to be there. So the way I attempted to do that is we used to have prasadam upstairs. And during the course of the prasadam, I used to read the Krishna pastimes every day. And I did that for 21 years in a row, every day, almost 7 days a week. And after a while, I actually got habituated to Krishna. I didn't want to leave. Didn't want to leave his thought. I wanted to always be involved in some way in his pastimes. And it encouraged me and motivated me to write some books about Krishna as well. So it worked very well, and the main point was the repetition. So by repeating, that was very helpful. Anyway, so Rukmini wanted very much to marry Krishna. Let me just say, on a deeper level, who Rukmini is. Actually, she's Lakshmi Devi. She's the goddess of fortune who's come down on earth. But in the eternal world, Lakshmi Devi is married to whom? To Lord Vishnu. Yeah, Krishna. So, to marry to Lord Vishnu. So, isn't it natural that she's on this plane that she would want to marry no one else but the Supreme Lord Krishna, because he's her eternal husband, her eternal spouse. He's the perfect person. So, here's what happened. In her kingdom, I can't remember the kingdom, but I remember her city, which is Kundana. In her city, she had her father, wanted her to marry Krishna. Her relatives wanted her to marry Krishna. The council people wanted her to. The ministers wanted that. The general public wanted Rukmini married to Krishna because they were the perfect match. So what happened was that her father had five sons. And one of the sons, his name was Rukmi. Now, Rukmi was not like his father, and he had a tendency to be attracted to demoniac type of persons. And he was attracted to one of those persons, who is Shishupal, who is the prince of Chitti. And Shishupal was one of the enemies of Krishna. Jarasandha was an enemy of Krishna. Dantavrakra was an enemy of Krishna. Vidarata was an enemy of Krishna. And there were several others who did not like Krishna. So Rukmi, wanting to do his friend a favor, although he knew that his father didn't want Rukmini marrying Shishupal, because it would have been a very bad deal for her, because her attraction was to Krishna, and that was well known. Nonetheless, he arranged for a marriage with Shishupal. Now, some of you may be wondering, why does Shishupal hate Krishna? I mean, what was his reason for doing that? Well, some people are just naturally hateful. They look at somebody and they look at their nose and they don't like long-nosed people, so they hate them. Or they don't like blonde hairs, or they don't like the dark hairs, or they don't like short people, tall people. People just have sometimes what you call natural hatreds, and somehow due to something that may have triggered it, something in their past when they were children, a person with a long nose hit them in the head, and he never forgot it, and therefore every time he saw a long nose, I hate you. So our hatreds and our loves are sometimes controlled by our childhood experiences or even our growing up experiences. Now, it just happened to be that when Shishupal was born, he was born with not two eyes, but three eyes. And he also didn't have two arms, but he had four grotesque-looking arms. So he looked like a sight for sore eyes, so sore that his parents wanted to just abandon him. This is the weekend. How can he grow up looking like this? Nobody would want to know him, so we should just abandon him and get rid of him. At that point, somebody knocked on the door. And who was it? It was some yogi. And the yogi, he said, no, no, don't abandon him. So they looked at him. How did he know we were going to abandon him? He said, don't abandon him because there is somebody out there, some prince or king is out there, who if he comes here and he puts Shishupal on his lap, that particular prince or king will be responsible automatically, miraculously, for removing the extra eye and the extra two arms. Then he added, but that person will be responsible for killing your son. So the parents heard that. Well, they're not going to abandon him now. So they invited kings from all over the place, north, east, south, west, central. And they all came and they would put Shishupal on their lap, and generally nothing happened. And then finally they invited Krishna, who happened to be his cousin, because his mother was the brother of Krishna's father. So when Krishna put him on his lap, lo and behold, voila, the eye disappeared and the extra two arms disappeared and he looked like a normal human being. Oh, everybody was happy, everybody was jolly, everybody was rejoicing that we have a normal child and Krishna was responsible for it. So, but the mother remembered very clearly that that Krishna would be responsible for killing him, and also the yogi had mentioned the reason he would kill him is because Shishupal would be very envious, and he would be very, very hostile, and he would always be making insulting remarks about Krishna. So, what she said to her son, she said, now look, it's predicted that Krishna will kill you if you always make insulting remarks to Krishna. So, what happens is that, so she tried to train him in such a way that he would not make any insults to Krishna. Be kind, be refined, be restrained in your speech. When you feel an insult coming out, put your hand over your mouth. Try to be, you know, a nice human being. Otherwise, Krishna is going to kill you. Well, the very idea of Krishna killing him is, he found out that Krishna was a cowherd boy. He was brought up amongst the cows and the calves and the bulls and the... how could he? I'm a Kshatriya. I'm a warrior. I know how to use weapons, swords and clubs and bow and arrow. All he knows how to do is milk the cows. How can he affect me? So he looked down at Krishna as being worthless, useless cowherd. That's the way he regarded him. And in many of his ridiculings, he would call him just that. You good for nothing cowherd. You're just a Vaishya. I'm a Kshatriya. I'm a warrior, like that. So therefore, there was always this insulting thing which he had. Anyway, anyways, his mother mentioned to him that please be very careful about your speech and how you treat him. So to him, it was a challenge. Let's see him do something to me. Let's see him hurt me. Let's see if anything can happen. So I'll tell a little about how Krishna killed him a little bit later on in the story, because I don't want to go far from the main point, which happened to be Rukmini. So Rukmini, what he did is he arranged for this Shishupal, who hated Krishna already, to marry Rukmini. And it was all set up. Of course, her father didn't like it, her mother didn't like it, the kingdom didn't like it, but he had given the responsibility to his oldest son to make that arrangement. And as a result, it would have been unethical to stop him at that point, especially since he was so attached to him. When a father is attached to his son, this is what Srila Prabhupada mentions in the book, when he's attached, he doesn't like to offend. The reason he doesn't like to offend the child, because he feels that that child or that son or that daughter is indispensable for his or her happiness. So if you feel that somebody is absolutely necessary for you to be happy, you don't want to say anything would be offensive. No, you better not. She should be married to Krishna. No, he's not going to say that. He gave that responsibility, so he can't take it back. Okay. Now, when Rukmini heard this, I should mention that Krishna also, he knew about Rukmini just as she knew about him. Well, how would he not know about her? He's a husband in the eternal world. So he knows everything. So he himself wanted to marry her because he knew that she had done literally thousands of years of penance, mortification, and austerities just to have Krishna as her husband. So great did she regard him. So high did she regard him. So important did she regard him that there was no one else in the world that she wanted to have as her husband. So she would do anything and everything to have him as her husband. So she spent thousands of years just to gain Krishna as her husband, as Lakshmi Devi receiving Vishnu as her husband. So therefore, they were a natural combination, and Krishna knew this. So what she did is this. So that she could get Krishna as her husband, she was very upset, very disturbed that this might take place. And it was only going to take place in 3 days. So how do you prevent this from happening? So what she did is she composed a nice letter, and in that letter she expressed her heartfelt sentiments to Krishna. She said, "You might think I'm just a shameless young girl, but I'm not. I know that next to any man, you're a lion and they're just a bunch of jackals." So that's the first thing, for starters. And she said, "You're the only person I want to marry, and I want you to kidnap me." So kidnapping means that usually in a kidnapping, it's not exactly the best word to use, but in a kidnapping, generally, the person... Thank you. I'm not kidnapping you, don't worry. So generally, in a kidnapping, the person who's kidnapped does not want to be taken, and usually the parents or the friends, they don't want the person to be taken. But in this case, Rukmini wanted to be taken. Her father wanted to be taken. The relatives wanted to be taken. So it was more of an elopement than a kidnapping, so to speak. That's what she wanted, to steal me away and we'll elope. Anyway, what happened was that she wrote this and she said, "Please, I would appreciate if you would please come here. The time is short, and if you don't come, what happened, I'll be hitched up with this guy who I'll hate, but I'm not going to allow that. I'd rather commit suicide than ever let this man touch me." She meant business, and I mean business. There was no fooling around with her. This is a kind of staunch devotee who really lives for a certain principle and won't let the principle of chastity just be frittered away, so to speak. Anyway, Krishna read the letter, and he saw how heartfelt it was written, and how much she wanted to be his wife. And she even told him how he could kidnap her. He said, don't go into the palace. That would be too risky. When I'm going to, at some point, go to the temple of Durga, where I'm going to pray to Mother Durga to please arrange somehow or another for me to marry you. So when I either go there or when I come out of the temple, that's the time to take me. And then nobody will get hurt. You just grab me, put me on your chariot, and zoom, we move out. You move out and try to get away as fast as possible. Of course, try to have your backup of your army so that if there's any fighting that takes place, we'll be able to take care of that. So that's exactly what happened. The day that it was planned for marriage, I should say Mukmini was a very beautiful girl. Prabhupada writes so beautiful and nice language. Our eyes were big like lotuses, and she had these beautiful lips and always a slight smile on her lips, and her hair. Her hair was beautiful. With her, there was no such thing as a good hair day. Every day was a good hair day for her. So there was no. It was beautiful, and she was beautiful as well. And she walked not like a lady, not like an elephant, as they sometimes describe, but like a swan gliding across. You see, and little mincing steps, kind of. And she was just a picture to behold. And that's exactly what happened when she came. They went to the temple, and she prayed to Mother Durga with all of the assistants and all the elders, please, please enable Krishna to kidnap me. Please, please, I want him and him alone for my husband. Please. And she's begging and begging like that. Finally, all of the prayers are over. She comes out of the temple and with some of her girlfriends at her sides, and she's looking around for Krishna. She doesn't go. All the warriors, they're all lined up in front of the temple, and they're looking at her, as we would say, giving her the eye. So she's looking, they're looking at her, and she is so stunning, so amazing, so lovely to look at, that some of them who were on their horses, they just fell backwards off their horses down onto the ground. That's how beautiful she was. They'd never seen anyone like that. So, but Krishna didn't fall on the ground. He kept his smarts. He kept his control, and he saw her, and as soon as he saw her, and she came near, and she noticed, she could see, although she had never met him before, but all the descriptions that she had gotten from the different sages, especially Narad Muni, it all added up to the beautiful, dark-skinned boy. He was quite young man that she was looking at. He was so handsome, so attractive, so beguiling, so to speak. So as soon as her eyes went up, Krishna immediately got off the chariot, took hold of her waist, picked her up, put her down on the chariot, and immediately turned the chariot around, and zoom, they zoomed out not into the sunset. It wasn't a sunset yet. But anyway, it was zooming out away. Anyway, what happened is Jarasandha, he said, what is going on here? We are letting this Krishna, but that was a big enemy. Already, King Krishna had defeated him many times. We're going to let this Krishna take Rukmini away? We've come here to see her married to Shishupal, and he's stealing her away. Where is our Kshatriya courage? Where's our Kshatriya merit? Let's get him. Let's kill him. You know, like that. So they all got on their chariots, and they started racing and after Krishna. At that point, Balaram, he had the army, as I said, in the backup, under the bushes, wherever they were, under the trees, and they all came out, and the big fight ensued. So the fighting was going on. Bows, arrows were going here and there, this way and that way, backwards and forwards. And but what was happening is that Balaram's army, as well as Krishna, he also was standing on the chariot, and he was shooting many of the different opponents. And what happened was that Jarasandha and Shishupal was not in that fight, by the way. He stood back. He was so morose. He was so depressed. He was so disgusted that here he was set to marry the most beautiful woman in the world, and now he had nothing, and Krishna had stolen her right from under his eyes. He was upset. He was very disturbed. So what happened was that opponents, they were becoming defeated. And they began to decide this, that this was a pointless battle. What's the point of even fighting? We're losing hundreds of our men. They're dying on the field. Better to let's get out of here. We're not ready to fight and win this battle. If let Shishupal fight it. He's just back there just moping away. He should be getting into it. So they left the battlefield. And what happened was that when Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini, saw that the supportive warriors, supportive of Shishupal, when those warriors were leaving the battlefield, Rukmi said, well, Krishna is going to get away with my sister, and I'm going to kill him. I vow to kill him today. If I don't kill him today, then I will leave my kingdom. I will leave this city of Kukundana, and I will find some other place to stay. Because he would be too disgraced since he's made a big, bold statement that he will kill Krishna. He was crazy. He was insane. Anyway, what happened was that he went out after Krishna, and finally he said, hey, Krishna, stay, wait, stop traveling with your chariot. Rukmini was right beside him, and then the fight ensued. So arrows started going back and forth, back and forth. Well, Krishna, you know, to him this is nothing. It's like baby play. So every time Rukmi took out an arrow and he pulled the string back, Krishna would shoot an arrow and break the bow. Crack. Another. He pulled another bow. Crack. He must have lost about 6 or 7 bows. And finally he took out his club. And then he decided that he would hurl the club. And in midair, Krishna shot a few arrows at the club and crack. Every weapon that he tried, whether it was a trident, whether it was a club, whether it was a lance, a spear, whatever it was, Krishna broke it in half. Finally, Rukmi didn't have any weapons left. And then Krishna destroyed his chariot. He destroyed his horse. And Rukmi was just standing there. And the next thing he was going to do, he was going to do a final number on him. He was going to actually kill him. But Rukmini, having a sentimental feeling about her brother, I mean, you all know, so a lot of you may have been raised with brothers and sisters, and you have that, even though they did so many nasty things to you, you still have some sentimental feeling for them. That happens, brothers and sisters. And although she knew he was not the best of brother, but nonetheless, she did not want Krishna to kill him. So Krishna said, all right, then I have to punish him in some way. So he took a piece of cloth, and he tied it around Rukmini's arms, and he tied him to a tree, and Rukmi was just sitting down on the tree, you know, looking kind of like this, poker face, so to speak. And then what happened was that in order to punish him, one of the worst things you can do to a kshatriya, to a warrior, is you cut his hair in such a way that he looks like a lunatic. So what he did, you know, he had the beard. So instead of just making a clear sweep of the beard, a polka dot here, a polka dot here, splotches here. So like a little like some of the young men today, they get their hair cut, you know, it looks like a carrot stalk up this way or a grapefruit coming out this way. All kinds of different ways. You wonder, why are they doing this? Well, it's 2014, so that's why they're doing it. You have to be different, you have to be unique, you have to be special. Anyway, so Krishna cut his hair off and made little circles here, some hair hanging out here, some coming down over his face. I mean, he looked ridiculous. So then finally Balaram came and he saw what Krishna had done. He said, Krishna, how did you do this? He's our brother-in-law now. Rukmini, she's your wife. And he's our brother-in-law. Look how you made him look. This is terrible. Don't you have any sense of etiquette? He said, well, he didn't have much etiquette either. He shot arrows at me. And I had this is what we call Rakshasa style marriage, kidnapping. So anyway, they got to talking and so forth and so on. Finally, Rukmi was let loose, and he, of course, could not go to Kundana. He went to Bhojakata and built a little hut there, and later on it built up, and he again became very well known as a prince. But Krishna and Rukmini went back to Dwarka. Dwarka was the place where Krishna was living, and they went there and they had a tremendous, wonderful, beautiful, glorious ceremony. I mean, it was the everything that was going on. The music was beautiful. The paintings all over were beautiful. The people there were beautiful. Everyone was glorifying Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Rukmini, and so forth. And so there was a very wonderful, beautiful, glorious occasion in which they were married. So that is the story of how Rukmini married Krishna, how Krishna married Rukmini, and they lived, yes, happily ever after. Are there any questions or comments anyone would like to make? Huh? What happened to Shusha? Oh, yes, I was. That's her. Thank you for reminding me. We're going a little late. But nonetheless, here's what happened. Later on, Shishupal, there was a big sacrifice that King Yudhishthir was going to make called the Raja Surya sacrifice. It's the biggest sacrifice that is held. And in effect, he is announcing or he is affirming that he is the emperor of the world. And he wanted to do this in order to let the world know that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he should be always looked up to, glorified, honored, bowed down to, celebrated, and worshipped. So what happened was that there was this meeting. Now, in this meeting, there were many, many holy men. There were many warriors, thousands of them. It was a huge meeting place. And in that meeting, in which Yudhishthira would be declared the emperor, there had to be a president, someone who took the first offering of the sacrifice. So Yudhishthira, declared that should be Krishna. And Bhishma Dev seconded that. Yes, it should be Krishna, because there is no one else more glorious, more wonderful, more powerful. He is the Supreme Lord. So Shishupal did not think so. And he was sitting there. Remember, he's a king. And he began to start a tirade. Tirade means it's like you shoot bullets, but he shot insults. One insult after another. And I already told you some of the insults, that this Krishna is nothing more than a cowherd. This Krishna, he's always flirting around, flirting with the cowherd girls. He's just a womanizer. I mean, every low name that you can call Krishna, he was doing that. So what Krishna was doing, now I forgot to mention at the early part of the talk, is that Krishna, when he was requested by Shishupal's mother to not kill him, he said, "I will not kill him provided he does not utter more than 100 insults at me. If he utters more than 100, he's dead." So she said, "Okay, that's a good deal, and I'll tell him he shouldn't insult you." So she tried to train him. She told him, "Don't, please, otherwise you lose your life." But do you think he would listen to his mother? No, he's not listening to his mother, because she's only a mother. And after all, he's only a cowherd. How can he destroy me? How can he affect me? How can he offend? How can he hurt me? He can't. He's just a good-for-nothing cowherd. So he wanted to take on the challenge. He wanted to prove that Krishna could not hurt him. So he went one after another, one insult, and then another insult, and then Krishna this, and Krishna that. So Krishna is sitting there counting on his fingers. I'm 66, 67, 68, 69, 60, 88, getting close, 91, 96, 97, and Shishupal is not even looking. He's just blurting one insult after another, blurting, blurting, and then finally 100, Krishna puts up his finger, and a nice little chakra starts whirling around his finger, has many sharp points on it. It just whoosh, and then Krishna says, "There." And then whoosh, it goes right to his head. Down was Shishupal's head on the ground, and that was the end of poor Shishupal. I should say, there's so much more to that story, that Shishupal actually was a great devotee in a previous lifetime. But he had committed some offense against the four Kumaras, and the result was that he, before in this birth, that birth, he was Shishupal and Dantavakra. They were originally Jai and Vijay, who were in the eternal world. They were gatekeepers there, and then they became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and then after Hiranyakashipu, then Robin and Kumbhakarna, and last Shishupal and Dantavaka. Thank you all very much. You've been a wonderful, wonderful assembly. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.
Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Nama Pristaya Krishna Pristaya Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Prasthatyadishatarini Namaste Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhari Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya